So, how much did you think this week? How much did you think this week? George Bernard Shaw said something one time that may sound a little rash and it may be insulting to some people, but he said, "Few people think more than two or three times a year. I have made an international reputation for myself by thinking once or twice a week." Now, what did he mean by that? Actually, it's probably true. Our minds are working all the time. That's not what Shaw meant. What he meant was going pretty deep into the thought processes on some particular subjects, a deep pondering of the issues of life. So it's not to say that our minds aren't working. Our minds are working all the time. Sometimes you can't even shut it off when you would like to. You're tired, but you can't. You're lying in bed, your mind is racing, and you can't stop thinking. We're always thinking. But it's not that we're not thinking, it's that we're not going real deep with it necessarily. Eleanor Roosevelt had a brilliant saying, and in fact, I've heard this saying for years, but I didn't know until just recently who said it. She said, "Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people." Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people. And you look around, you can just stop at the newsstand and say, okay, what are most of the magazines putting our thinking on? People. Us. You know. Things. You know. But a lot of our focus in life is steered towards unnecessary things that really don't impact our lives. And it's really a shame because one of the greatest works of God was to create the human mind. It's an amazing, amazing thing. But our usage of its capacity has probably never been tapped the way that it should be. And often with the world around us, when you think of the group think of the world, it's often misguided because the way we think is influenced by the way other people think. And it tends to go in areas that are either wrong or not very deep. And yet on the other hand, in some ways, if you say, well, let's try to get people to think more deeply, that can be scary too because it is thinking that has gotten the world in the mess it's in. And sometimes you think, well, maybe that's not a good thing to advise people to think more because unless they think correctly, it's not going to be of any good. There's a statement in Isaiah 55 where God says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." So God is telling us there, I think at a certain level. You think at a different level. And we're not on the same level. God says, I don't use my mind the same way that humans use their minds. He uses his mind differently. And for us to be on the same wavelength as God, we have to change our thinking. God is not going to dumb himself down. God's not going to dumb down to our level. But he does say you can change your thinking to think my way. And brethren, the fact that we are even sitting here today is a testimony to the fact that we changed our thinking. God helped us. God worked in us, of course, to change our thinking. But he made us think. And he made us think differently. We were willing to keep changing our way of thinking all the way through a certain process that led us to a point. Now, the parable of the seed and the sower basically shows that there's something along the way that stops people's thinking toward God. There are persecutions arise, was one of the things that Christ said. And so people start thinking in a different way. The cares of the world come up and they start thinking in a different way. But those who are here, those who follow God all the way to the end, are those who think and they keep thinking that way, and they go through a process of learning new things and then understanding what they've learned, grasping it, And then they think about doing those new things. And it's a continual spiritual process to think the way God thinks and to implement it. And so God put us on a new way of thinking, and He designed that path to continue. And above all things, we should be thinkers. People of God should be thinkers. And in fact, we have to be thinkers, because there's a statement in Romans 12:2 that tells us, do not be conformed to this world. Well, how can we be otherwise? How are we going to be different from this world? He goes on to tell us it has to do, the core is in the way we think. Because he says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Change the thinking. Renew the mind. Think in a different way. That you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. That takes a lot of thinking. It may take education. It may take other people telling us what they've thought about. But then we have to think about what they've told us. And we have to think about it often enough that our patterns of previous thinking alter. They change. This whole conversion of the mind goes back to the way we think. And then the way we think leads to the way we live. As Proverbs 23:7 says, as he thinks in his heart, so is he. If you want to reverse it, we can say the way we are depends on what we think in our hearts. So thinking is critically important to us. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 1. You may have gathered already, we're going to spend about an hour here thinking about thinking. You've been doing it already. Maybe you hadn't thought of it, but you were thinking about thinking. 1 Peter 1, verse 13. Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Hope is entirely about thinking. There's nothing tangible about hope. You don't go pick up a box of hope. It's something that exists only in your mind. It's only in the way that you think and perceive things. And he says, you know, but how important is hope? He says, gird up the loins of your mind. Be sober. The word sober in the Greek is nepho, N-E-P-H-O. Literally, it means to be free of intoxicants. But metaphorically, it's used in connection with being watchful, being alert, how the mind works, watchful with the mind. There's a related word in the Greek, eknepho, I should say, E-K-N-E-P-H-O, and it's often translated awake, awake. And literally, the implication of this, according to some of the word commentaries, means to return to one's senses from drunkenness, or to return to a sobriety of mind that is caused by a stupor of wrong influences on the thinking. Wrong doctrine, evil in the world, any kind of wrong-headed thinking is likened to being intoxicated. Your mind's not right. The mind's not in the right place. And so the word means to return to a place of clear thinking, being clear-headed. And he says, gird up the loins of the mind. Verse 14, as obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance. Now, ignorance can come from a lack of knowledge, or ignorance can come from a lack of thinking about knowledge you've been given. Sometimes you can tell people something, they just didn't think. You ever told a little child, now, you know, if you do this, here's what's going to happen. Then they turn around and do it. It wasn't because of a lack of knowledge. They weren't. And what do they say when they get there, when they burn their fingers? Why'd you do that? Well, I don't know. I just wasn't thinking. It wasn't because they didn't know. Ignorance, some people stay in ignorance because they don't think about knowledge that they've been given. But it goes on to say, As he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. Being holy, being holy is a state of behavior, it's a state of actions, it's what we do. But that requires a lot of thought about how is God holy? How is God holy? We're going through with the young adults in the Bible study, godly leadership. And part of what we studied at length was in Philippians, where it says, Philippians 2:5, let this mind be in you what was in Jesus Christ. What was in his mind? What all goes on in the mind? There's a ton of stuff that goes on in the mind. How did he think? And we understand this a little bit more from what Paul wrote. And actually, when you read what Paul and Peter wrote, seems like they thought about thinking quite a bit. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul indicates something here where he understood where the battle for life is. 2 Corinthians 10:3, for though we walk in the flesh, we're all humans, though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. That's not our battleground. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, they're not fleshly, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. Now, what are the strongholds that we have to pull down? Verse 5, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. And being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. This is where the battle is won and lost. This is where the Isaiah 55 factor comes in. My thoughts are not your thoughts. My thoughts are higher than your thoughts. And so the weapons that God has given us have to do with pulling down strongholds that work against proper thinking, godly thinking. Now, one of the best ways to do that is through something that very few people engage in constructively and purposefully. In fact, the biblical term that we're going to be looking at today a lot, if you used it today, most people would probably think you were referring to some practices of New Age religion or Far Eastern religions. The Bible is full of instruction concerning the thoughts and the mind and the heart and the attitude and the processes that govern what goes on inside the heads. And it indicates to us that one of the most powerful tools to properly govern our thinking is called meditation. Meditation. You talk about meditation today, though, and you immediately conjure up, no. And so we have to understand what that means. But meditation is essentially controlled, guided thinking with a certain direction. It means to contemplate, to muse, to ponder, to study. This is what George Bernard Shaw was referring to when he said few people think more than two or three times a year. Now, why would that be when our minds are racing all the time? The minds are racing, but there's not much meditation. Henry Ford had a famous observation. The way he thought of it was, as he said it, thinking is the hardest work there is, which is why so few people engage in it. Thinking is the hardest work there is, which is why so few people engage in it. He was hitting on something at the core of the nature of most people. Most humans are inherently lazy and busy. Humans essentially like the easiest way possible, the path of least resistance. Meditation, thinking deeply about things, takes hard work, takes focus, takes time, takes concentration. It's challenging. It's very easy not to think that way. We can get so busy, we can get caught up in things to do, socializing, working, burning the midnight oil, you know, all the things going on. And frankly, it's one of the challenges in our day and age with so much information coming at us and so many temptations to go off in different things that we really don't think deeply about anything. Meditation does not grow well in the soil of exhaustion and busyness. It's tough when we're so busy. Meditation, I think, is one of the first victims of the cares of this life. In Luke 21, Christ warned about being caught up in the cares of this life. And meditation is one of the victims of that. It weighs the heart down. Besides laziness and busyness preventing meditation, there's another reason too. It can be painful. It can be painful. James Thurber, the writer, wrote one time, 60 minutes of thinking of any kind is bound to lead to confusion and unhappiness. Now, why would he say that? Well, you know, that worldview is not new. He just worded it in a certain way, but many people have felt that. They think it's too painful. Because a lot of the deep things in life, people struggle to come up with answers. And apart from God, it can be very frustrating. If a person sits down to ponder, why is there suffering? You may end up at the end of 60 minutes. If you don't have godly answers to it, it can be very painful. It can be because to tackle a subject and to not be able to come up with a satisfactory answer is a painful thing to do. It's frustrating. You want answers to life. And so when we tackle deep subjects, sometimes it's just tough. There was a time in David's life when he felt that way. We'll come to this a little bit later, but he said in Psalm 73, he was looking at the unfairness of life, and he made the statement, "When I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me." He got frustrated at trying to figure out something that was going on. And that's the way that it can be apart from God. And when he reached that stage, he was thinking apart from God, as we'll see a little bit later. We'll see what turned it around. Actually, I said David, that might have been Asaph. We'll find out when we get there. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 1:13, Solomon said, "I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This grievous task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised." The word exercise can mean afflicted. And Solomon, when you read through Solomon's writing, so much of it was frustration. He was thinking about everything. How to do this? How to get happiness here? How to understand this problem there? And what follows was his frustration of thinking about life. But it also, one of the lessons of Ecclesiastes is the lesson about the frustration of thinking solo. Thinking by yourself, apart from God. Thinking apart from God and the understanding of God. So, you know, the result of not working hard to think or resisting meditation because it is hard or it can be painful, if we don't meditate, if we don't think in a certain way, we turn our thinking over to others. We turn our thinking over to other people. And by that, I mean, if we don't think deeply about some things with God, then our minds will be flooded with the thoughts of that other people have. Because that's what communication is. Communication is sending out your thoughts in some way so that other people can have access to them. And the world is communicating continually. And believe me, Satan would love nothing more than to be the one who drives the bus when it comes to thinking. He wants to get us to think in certain ways. And one of the things he wants us to do too is not even think. If he can just get us where we don't think too much about things, then the mind can be stuffed with material that's either shallow or stuff that is destructive, one way or the other. When we read that Christ was tempted in all points as we are, yet without sin, has it ever crossed your mind that was he ever tempted to not have enough effort put into meditation? It says he was tempted in every point as we are, yet without sin. We usually don't consider that living in this world, he faced the same challenges about thinking, and he had to deal with that too. Even the busyness of life. Even getting caught up with so much to do that you don't have time to really sit down and think. But he took care of that challenge, and he did it consciously, and he did it successfully. Let's go to Mark chapter 6. Mark 6, there's a lesson in here about this issue of time, and some other lessons too about constructive thinking. Mark 6. Verse 30. Then the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And he said to them, "Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat." You ever been caught up in a day where you said, "Man, I didn't even have time to eat today. I was going so fast and furious." Oh, I think we can identify with this. Sometimes we have to recognize that. And he said, the reason why he said this was because there was so much going on. They were so busy. And he told them, "Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest." It's not like their busyness was bad stuff. They were busy with good things to do. There were many coming and going. They were serving. Sometimes you have to get by yourself in the right place and stop. You just have to do it. Verse 32. So they departed to a deserted place in the boat by themselves. But the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him and ran there on foot from all the cities. And they arrived before them and came together to him. You know, you ever feel like things in life just won't let you rest? That, you know, it's like sometimes the items of my to-do list, they run on foot from all over, and they arrive before I do. You know, it's like you wake up in the morning and you're instantly hit with all this stuff I've got to do. They're waiting for you wherever you go. When you lie down at night and you try to go to bed, you're thinking, "Ah, I got all this. I forgot to put that down. I've got to do that tomorrow." You know, they were trying to get off by themselves, and life wouldn't let them. Verse 34. Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude. And it didn't frustrate him. He was moved with compassion for them because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. He sat down with them and he started doing things that were on his to-do list that had to be done, that needed to be done. And sometimes there are things that legitimately need to be done. Verse 35, when the day was now far spent, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place. Already the hour is late. Send them away that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat." Their solution was, let's ignore the needs. His solution was, let's take care of the needs. And so he performed a miracle here, the loaves and the fishes. You can read about this. And that was wonderful. Their needs were taken care of. And yet in the process of taking care of their needs, he just probably created people who wanted to be around him even more. We come to verse 45. At this point, he even needs to get away from the disciples. Sometimes you just need alone time with nobody else. You don't even need your husband or wife there. You just need by yourself. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side to Bethsaida while he sent the multitude away. And when he had sent them away, he departed to the mountain to pray. So he took a break. He constructed a time to think, to pray, to plan in a certain place, in a certain environment, by himself. Now later when you read ahead, you'll see that after that time, he went back to work. There were more people flooding around him. There were people who were seeking him to help them. And in chapter 7 and verse 1, We're introduced to people who are trying to get close to him in order to attack him and to accuse him. I have no doubt that in his human experience, as a human, he needed time away from doing other things that were necessary in order to do things that were more necessary. And there's a time when you reach, when you say, I have to take care of some things in order to be able to deal with life. He was going to have to deal with some very important things, and he knew he needed time to be alone and to pray. It says in verse 47, he was alone on the land while they were out there in the boat. We find in this account two very important concepts. Number one, make time to think. Make time to meditate and be in an environment that makes good thinking possible. Be in an environment that makes good thinking possible. And number two, think in the right direction. He went to pray. Prayer is based on what? Thinking. Prayer is simply communicating with God what you're thinking about. We think as we talk to God. That's what effective prayer is all about. When you read the Psalms, those are all the accounts of the thoughts that were in David's mind, or in Asaph's mind, or whoever else's mind. The first point of making the right time and environment addresses getting out of the set routine. Christ went to the mountain. He understood the way the mind works. You have to free your mind from certain environments. You know, one of the best things you can do for meditation is simply to get out in creation. Get out in God's creation somewhere. That does wonders. Where you don't contend with the radio, the TV, the telephone, the dogs barking, even just four walls. You know, I look at four walls in my office, and that's something man-made. I'd rather get out in something God-made. Because it does something for you. Have you ever noticed how that taking a walk in the woods, sitting by a waterfall, looking out over a meadow, walking on the beach, like maybe you did at St. Augustine, just looking out over a lake, any type of natural environment does something for the mind? It's like your mind is affected by the environment which you're in. You ever wonder about that? I did one time with somebody. I was in a conversation, and he said something that made all the sense in the world. Never forgotten it. This man told me, we were just talking about that very thing. Why do you feel better? Why do you think better when you're just taking a walk in the woods somewhere? And he said, I believe it is because when you are in nature, you are in a lawful environment. When you are in nature, you are in a lawful environment. What he meant by that, you are in the environment that God created, and God made everything to work according to law. Even physical laws. The tree that falls over does so for a reason. The cycle of the leaves turning out here is doing it. God created it that way. It's the law of the way life recycles, the way life generates. You look around and you are in God's creation. And God made everything to work systematically. He made it to work lawfully. And we're not talking about necessarily spiritual laws, but just physical laws. And physical laws are a reflection of the order of spiritual laws. So when you are in the woods, you're in His creation. And that works according to laws. And where there is law, there is peace. Where there is lawfulness, there is peacefulness. And so even you don't even think about it. I mean, you don't consciously think about, oh, I feel, well, taking this walk on the beach at sunrise, you know, just put my mind in a certain place. You don't necessarily think about why it's happening, but the influence is there. And I believe that has a lot to do with it, that the environmental effect is conducive to better thinking. If you're taking a walk down Main Street here in Raleigh, I'm not going to say that you can't think. I mean, it's not that. But I think there's a case to be made that you think better when you're not distracted, when you're in an atmosphere, the right atmosphere. That's also something to consider concerning the Sabbath. If we say, oh, I just don't have time to think so often, it's frustrating. God gives us the Sabbath. At least once every 7 days, we have time to stop. We have time to think, if we use that time. But we have to think about using our Sabbath time wisely. And we can train ourselves to relax, to set time aside, to meditate, to think. You know, baseball season just ended. And you may or may not care about baseball. I love the game, always have, played it since I was a kid. George Will wrote a book about it. You know, George Will mostly writes about politics, but he's a baseball fan too, and he wrote a book called Men at Work. And there's a section there when he said a lot of people don't like baseball because they say it's so slow. But he said when you really understand the game, it goes by too fast. He said when a manager has to think about between every pitch, nine players, what's going on, the strategy, he says you don't have enough time to think about everything that needs to be thought about in baseball. But you have to understand the game in order to think that way. Well, I read that and I thought, that's the way the Sabbath is. The Sabbath goes by too fast. We don't have enough time to think about all the things that need to be thought about. But at least the Sabbath gives us some time. It's the best place to start. It's the best time we have. But the point of Mark here is Christ recognized the need for time and place. Then the second factor is the discipline to think in the right direction. It says he went to pray. Prayer is not the only thing he did, though. You know, it just doesn't make any sense that it was only prayer. Prayer, again, is based on thinking. We think as we talk to God. So what do we find? What do we find about thinking in the right direction? Well, one of the most fundamental instructions in the Bible is found in Philippians chapter 4. Philippians 4, and verse 8, it said, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. This is directional thinking. This tells us, take the mind in that direction. Now, I don't have time to break down. You could give entire sermons on each one of these points here. You can think about that. But the theme is very clear. It's a positive direction. Now, does this mean you never think about bad things? You ever watch the news? You'd have to isolate yourself somewhere and try to, you know, be a hermit from the world. Because if you see the news, if you pick up the paper, if you go to the store, there's so much bad stuff, negative stuff, that comes in. Now, we have to think about the full spectrum of life, but this instruction here has to do with the direction that we go and where we end up, where we need to be when we finish. Because we always have to ask ourselves, which direction am I going with this? A lot of people allow their thoughts to spiral downward. They take it in a negative direction. God's way is not that way. God's way is a way of solutions. It's a way of understanding. They come up with the worst case scenarios, the negatives, the arguments that exalt themselves against God, against the knowledge of God. Have you ever found yourself wrestling with an issue of faith? You recognize it as what it is? That is something that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. If I'm struggling with my faith, I am fighting a thinking battle about something that's, because the knowledge of God is very clear about faith. What works against faith are issues like worry and doubt, fear, you know. Those are all things of thinking. And so Philippians 4:8 here has to do with going in that direction. In verse 9, he said, the things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. Right thinking leads to the peace of God. This tells us, turn our thoughts to the constructive. Even in a bad situation, don't abandon thoughts about faith. Even in the most negative situation, proper meditation can direct us in the right way, and we'll see some examples of that momentarily. You might remember last February when we were in Greensboro, Mr. Kelly and I had split sermons, and I talked about the four enemies of faith and told a story there that may be worth recounting at this point. Some of you weren't there and didn't hear it, and you might have forgotten it if you did. But in order to fight the enemies of faith, we have to sometimes start with thinking about the bigger picture and work back to where we are right now in our circumstance. The story that I told there was about a lady who called me one time, and she was in a horrific financial condition. And she was worried, and she was fretting, and she was consumed with it, and she was just basically panicked with where her life was right then. And finally, I had to take control of the conversation and tell her, just stop a minute. Let me ask you a few questions, because it was just spilling out of her, all of her concerns. I said, listen to me and just answer some questions. And these were progressive questions. They were not random. They were designed to go down one logical step to another one. And I started with, do you believe God exists? And she goes, well, yeah. I said, is the Bible His Word? Yes. Did Christ die for you? Yes. Did you die for Him through repentance and baptism? Yes. Do you have the Holy Spirit? Yes. If you died today, do you believe you'd be resurrected and be in His kingdom? Think so, hope so. Does God know your situation right now? Yes. Did He promise He would never leave you or forsake you? Yes. Did David, who had seen a lot, did he say, I've never seen the righteous forsaken or begging bread? Yes. So think about your congregation here. Is this congregation full of your friends? Yes. Have you been working hard, struggling hard to do your part in this? Yes, I have. Do you know how you're going to pay your bills? No. Do you think God can find a way? Yeah, I think He can. As we talked, there was a calm that just sort of settled over her. The panic just sort of left, but it only was because of changing the way of thinking about an issue. It was all about the thinking process. The enemy of faith was being beaten back, and the tide was turning for her. At the end of these questions, I told her, while we've been sitting here, I've just written a check out for you from the church's emergency fund, and you'll have the money that you need to meet your bills. It's in the envelope. I'm going to put it in the mail as soon as we're off the phone. If you reverse the conversation and say, well, what if we would have started with, how are you going to pay your bills? I don't know. Where would we have gone from there? Thinking, worry is thinking. That's all it is. Worry is just thinking that's going down a certain highway. Worry prevents us from putting God in the picture, and a lack of faith increases. And we don't answer the big questions. Does God know? Does God care? Meditation, and we'll see this in the Psalms momentarily, begins there. Why did I know to tell that lady? Because I'd been there not too far before that with myself in another circumstance. Having battled through some issue, and you get through the issue and then you find out, wow, that wasn't going anywhere the way I thought it was going. And I should have been thinking differently about this. So you learn some things. Proverbs 16:3 says, commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts will be established. Commit your works to the Lord and your thoughts will be established. That means focusing on the right things. So when Christ went off by himself to pray, he was directing his thinking toward God. He wasn't going off to the mountain to figure it all out by himself. He was committing himself to God. He was thinking about these issues. You think about the works of the Lord, and then you align your works with his, and the thinking changes. Now, one of the writers of Psalms, Asaph, had learned this. Let's go to Psalm 73. Referred to this momentarily a little bit ago, but this offers some great insight to the thinking process. Psalm 73. I'm really glad this psalm is in here because it tells us the reality of what life is like for all of us from time to time. It begins in verse 1, "Truly God is good to Israel, to such as are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped." Why? Verse 3, "For I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." Envy comes from what? Thinking. It comes from thinking in a bad way. That's all it is. Envy is, it's like hope. There's no box of envy somewhere that you have a poor bowl full for breakfast. It's all in thinking processes. And he was looking at situations. He saw the prosperity of the wicked. And then he started thinking and mulling it and pondering it. But it was not in the path of what we just read in Philippians. He was thinking wrongly. And it's easy to go there. But looking at the prosperity of the wicked that way is only one way of seeing the situation. His thinking went down the wrong path. It goes on to describe the way he was thinking about the wicked. I'm not going to go through this whole thing because that's not my point. But it eventually led to thinking about his efforts then. First of all, he starts thinking about them. Then he starts thinking about, look at me. I'm out here, I'm just beating my head against the wall, trying to do the right thing. Nothing good happens to me, you know, type of thing. You know, the thinking starts going there. He was meditating all right. But he was stuck in a bad rut of seeing things only one way. And it was not the Philippians 4:8 model. We come to verse 13, and here's where his thoughts come to. "Surely I have cleansed my heart in vain, washed my hands in innocence." I've had people tell me over the years, "Well, I tithe and tithing doesn't pay. You know, God hasn't blessed me." Well, okay. That's the way you're thinking about it. And he says here, "I cleansed my heart in vain, washed my hands in innocence, for all day long I have been plagued and chastened every morning." So, you know, this thinking is settling in. And then he says, "If I had said, I will speak thus, behold, I would have been untrue to the generation of your children." I can't talk about it. I can't really speak about this out loud because it's almost like, I know it's not right, but that's the way I feel. I know intellectually it's not right, but man, it's just the way I feel about it. And I'm thinking this way. And then he comes to verse 16. And he said, "When I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me." This is a bad place to end up, isn't it? That's a tough place to be when you're thinking about something that's pretty deep in life. Why do the wicked prosper? Man, if that's where your conclusion is, it's wow. But something changes. Verse 17, "Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understood their end." He began to think differently. He went to the sanctuary of God. What does that mean? I think it means exactly what it's talking about, what Christ did. He set aside time and he went to be with God in prayer. It's not a place that you go to necessarily. We don't say, oh, well, next door, they call that the sanctuary. I guess we should go over there and think. No, it's being with God in your prayer, in your meditation, in your study. And that began to change his thinking. All he was thinking about was what's happening right now. He wasn't thinking about what's the end. But going to the sanctuary of God, bringing God into the picture here, was so important. One of the great lessons that the benefit of meditation is that even if you're stuck in a rut, if you're really meditating, the whole nature of meditation is that it begins to take you around a subject. You begin to look at it from other angles. You're looking at this issue right here, and you're looking at it only this way, and then by meditating, you begin to take a look at it over here, and you begin to walk around whatever the issue is in life and see it from other perspectives. And then you begin to see the whole picture. Meditation is so valuable for that. But this chapter illustrates there were two trains of thought in this man's mind. And one was negative, and it could have been very destructive to him. But it eventually turned positive through the help of God. A few verses later, he even records for us some of his thoughts about his thoughts. In verse 21, he said, "Thus my heart was grieved, and I was vexed in my mind. I was so foolish and ignorant." Doesn't mean he wasn't thinking, but he says, "I was ignorant in my thinking. I was so foolish and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. Nevertheless, I am continually with you, and you hold me by my right hand. You will guide me with your counsel, and afterward receive me to glory." Meditation, spiritually, is asking God to help guide us with his counsel. You know, I will just read it. You don't have to turn back because we're going to stay in Psalms. But I did not read to you in Philippians 4 what verse 6 says. Verse 6 says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus." God says, "I'll work in you," but it says, "in everything by prayer." So one of the things in prayer is to ask God, "Help me to think." Pray to God. "Help me to think. I don't trust my own thinking. Help me to think. And when I sit down to think, please guide me." Psalm 55. Psalm 55, verse 17. David said, "Evening and morning and at noon I will pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice." The word for pray, there are a number of different words for the pray and prayer in the Bible. They mean different things. In this place, the word for pray, the Hebrew word is siach, S-I-Y-A-C-H, S-I-Y-A-C-H, siach. And it means to ponder. That's the primary meaning, to ponder. It also means, by implication, to converse with oneself, and or aloud, or to utter. And it's translated commune, complain, declare, meditate, muse, pray, speak, talk with. It's the same word that's used in Genesis 24:63, where it says, "Isaac went out to meditate in the field at the eventide." So David was saying here, in essence, evening and morning and noon, it says I will pray, but as some versions explain it, it means to bow down to meditate. Literally, to bow down and meditate. It's almost like he was bowing down, he would talk to God for a little bit, think for a little bit, talk some more to God, think some more, you know, just have this process of thinking about things, but constantly being there. By the way, it's interesting, that statement about Isaac. What was he doing? He went out to meditate in the field, in nature, at eventide, go to the right place, get away, in the right environment, to meditate. Prayer is an excellent time, not only for talking with God, but thinking. with God too. Just thinking. It's another reason why prayer is important. It gives us time to think. There's nothing wrong with pausing in our prayer to think. And again, asking God, help me to think, should be part of our prayers. Psalm 19. Psalm 19, 14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. It's asking God, again, help me to think in the right way. I want this to be acceptable in your sight. God is not the author of confusion, and He can give us the right thinking. David said in Psalm 139, he said, search me, O God, know my heart, try me, know my anxieties. He said, see if there's any wicked way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Again, it's partly asking God, you know my thoughts, help me to think in the right way. That's one of the great works of the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God helps us think. When we're converted, we're not on autopilot, you know. We're not on autopilot. Our minds can be steered by God in the right direction. Let's quickly go through some other principles here concerning thinking. Psalm chapter 1. The very first psalm. We sing this song often. Psalm 1 and verse 2, talking about people who are blessed. His delight is in the law of God, and in His law He meditates day and night. The margin says ponders, talks to himself, thinking. But it's in the law of God. It's thinking about the law of God. It's applying the law of God. It's thinking about problems and causes and solutions. It's thinking about cause and effect. It's thinking about get versus give. I mean, all these things that are spiritual laws of life. Psalm 119. Psalm 119, verse 15. He says, I will meditate on your precepts and contemplate your ways. I will meditate on your precepts. In other words, we'll start breaking down the law into its various components. Contemplate your ways. Look into it is what the margin says. Look into it. Verse 23, princes also sit and speak against me, but your servant meditates on your statutes. This would be a good place to write in your margin. Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people. David was writing here, you know, there are people who talk about me. I'd rather think about statutes of God, the laws of God, thinking about these ideas. Verse 48, my hands also I will lift up to your commandments, which I love, and I will meditate on your statutes. So he's writing here about laws, precepts, statutes, in other words, the things that are of God directing our thinking, instead of what? Our emotions, our own ideas. You ever get caught up thinking about an issue and then realize that your emotions have gotten in it? And emotions can almost be blinding. You know, you can just, and when you stop, when you get away from it emotionally, you can think more clearly. You know, that happens so many times in life. The law of God is solid. It's not based on emotions. It's based on principles. Verse 97. He said, oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. All the day. It's an interesting verse in Psalm 63. We didn't turn there. You should jot this down too. Psalm 63, verses 5 and 6. David said, my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the night watches. It's like he said, I've gone to bed. And I'm thinking about it, thinking about things. You know, it's very interesting to try to get into the habit of thinking and praying when you go to bed. When you lie down and it gets quiet. I remember being surprised one time when I heard Mr. Armstrong say, "I try to fall asleep every night praying." At first I thought, fall asleep? You go to sleep on God? Does that sound disrespectful? Well, it would be disrespectful if Mr. Reisdorf had fallen asleep giving the opening prayer, you know, up here. It'd be disrespectful if you fall asleep asking the blessing on the meal. Or, you know, if you're in the morning and you're praying to God and you just can't keep awake, it's probably better to find another place. But the last thing at night, sort of like ending your day by thinking and talking with God, and that's the last thing on your mind. And somewhere along the line, you stop thinking and you stop talking and you just drift off. I don't think that's a bad thing to do. He said, it's my meditation all the day. Verse 98. You, through your commandments, make me wiser than my enemies. Wisdom has to do with thinking. For they are ever with me. What, the enemies or the commandments? Well, probably both, you know. We have our enemies, but the commandments of God are always there too. I have more understanding than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. So the Sansino commentary says, by constant meditation on the law of God, one receives the deepest discernment. One grows deeper in life. I understand more than the ancients because I keep your precepts. I have restrained my feet from every evil way that I may keep your word. A lot of people get in trouble because they were not thinking about the things that would help them choose to restrain their feet. Again, what phrase do we hear the most in the after effects of somebody doing something stupid?
I just wasn't thinking.
Well, that's right. And most of the thinking that needed to be done well before we got into the temptation. Because temptations can be blinding too. We need to have thought it through before we get there. But when we're thinking in the law of God, when we're constantly thinking about God's way of life, we will tend to be in a position where we don't get into every evil way because we restrain our feet. We restrain our feet because we've pre-thought about it. We've meditated on it. I have not departed from your judgments, for you yourself have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Through your precepts I get understanding. Therefore I hate every false way. Verse 59. You might ask, why? Why do we hate every false way? Verse 59 of Psalm 119. I thought about my ways and turned my feet to your testimonies. This was deep thinking that led to behavioral change. There's a lot of thinking that's going on when he says, "Like, I've been thinking about God's law, and then I also thought about my ways." That cannot be shallow thinking. That's never based on shallow thinking. And turning my feet to your testimonies. As I said earlier in some of the comments about preaching the gospel, people will only come into the church of God when they have thought things through pretty deeply. When they've been drilling down into deeper things. And they keep thinking, and they keep thinking, and they keep thinking. And finally they think, what am I going to do? That's how God calls a person. There are a lot of people who stop that thought process. Hey, I don't want to hear any more. That's enough. Or I'm not interested in thinking about that. But to turn my feet, that requires some pretty deep thinking. Well, there's a lot in here to consider. Psalm 143. Ooh, I'm thinking it's time to quit. Especially when I think to look at my clock. I looked, 10 minutes ago I looked at it and it was 4:00. Okay. Well, there are more scriptures that you can understand and consider and ponder. All you have to do is look it up. Let's summarize it like this. God has given us this most marvelous creation, the mind. It's the mind, along with the spirit in man, that sets this mind apart from anything else that's out there. And two amazing things take place in this mind. We collect and store information, and then we process it and decide what we will do. Every human does. That's why the mind is a marvelous tool, but without the Spirit of God there, it can also be a dangerous tool. It can be a dangerous tool. God tells us to use our minds, but to use it in the right way, because misguided thinking can be fatal. Even for a Christian, our thinking can go wrong. It's happened to many. We have to be on guard about it. Guided thinking, meditation, is one of the best tools for opening the door to godly understanding and godly living. I've had a few quotes in here from other people. I'll end with one of the most famous statements about thinking by Rene Descartes, who said, "I think, therefore I am." And God gives us a higher plane to consider it. God says, "Think like I think, and you can be like me."